The views given on the following program are not necessarily the views of the station management or staff. Since individual situations can and will be different, please remember this when exercising any options presented by our guests.
Success is equated with excess. The ambition for excess wrecks us. As the top of the mountain becomes the bottom line, where success is equated with excess.
This is Care for My Wealth. With Chris Klein of Capstone Wealth Management, your fee-only investment firm. Now, here's your Care for My Wealth guy, Chris Klein.
This is Care for My Wealth here, Fox Sports 1070 The Game, hanging out this Saturday morning with Mr. Chris Klein of Capstone Wealth Management. You can get to know Chris and his team at Capstone Wealth Management all online, careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. The telephone number, 866-596-9886. Again, that number, 866-596-9886. And you can also email Chris, info@careformywealth.com. That's I-N-F-O. At careformywealth.com. Chris, how you doing this weekend?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing really, really good. And you were telling me just a bit before we came on the air this morning about what's happening and kind of not just what's happening today, how it's going to affect things moving forward, specifically kind of the effect on next quarter. And it seems like so much in the financial world, and I know we talk about this on the show, so much is on month to month, so much is on day to day, minute to minute, that people generally aren't looking ahead to kind of how things are setting up going forward. Let's talk about kind of what's going on now and the effect that it's going to have as we move forward and going into the next quarter.
Yeah, get a playbook. How about that? We're actually in Q3.
Yes.
Huh. Where does time go, right?
Yeah, it's amazing.
So the biggest thing that people need to recognize and be prepared for is the fact that we are more than likely past peak inflation. And I'm going to talk about that in terms of what that means and what that looks like. But you might remember in June of 2020, I mean, this obviously goes back 2 years, we talked about how inflation was coming, and not just kind of coming, but coming hot, right? And you might remember at that time we talked about, hey, look, this is a great time to be starting to increase your exposure to commodities and things that are going to help you play inflation. Well, now the opposite of that is starting to happen, right? And now not only are we not long commodities, we're actually working toward building up max short commodities. So anyone that's tuning in for the first time who've never heard those terms before, long just means that you own it. So back in 2020, we wanted to own inflation because all the data points were suggesting it's going to come and it's going to come hard. No, it wasn't transitory. The Fed so badly told everybody. And we knew that it wasn't going to be just based on, again, the rate of change. And that's the key, the rate of change of all the data points. And short just simply means that you're anticipating that that asset class that you're shorting is going to go down. And when you short something that you have a short position into, it's and it goes down, you make money on it. So what stands out to us, a number of things, but what really, really stands out to us is the extent to which the people in officialdom, in this case specifically at the Fed, are either completely ignorant to what's actually going on within our economic cycle, or they're lying. And I know I've said that before, and I know that sounds in some respects terrible, but I don't know how else to play it. And I'm going to give you an example. So on the 15th of June, the Fed specifically stated, and I quote Fed Chairman Jay Powell, overall economic activity appears to have picked up after edging down in the first quarter. All right, that was the statement. Now, here's what reality is. Retail sales went negative in May. And when you look at it on a rate of change basis, so what's rate of change? Rate of change math is how the market functions. And if you don't understand rate of change math, do some work to come to understand what that looks like. But rate of change as viewed on a quarter over quarter, month over month, or year over year cycle will give you a tremendous amount of insight in terms of how the machine, Wall Street, is moving to or away from an asset class. And when we think of rate of change, we want to look as to whether or not that change is accelerating or decelerating. And retail sales are on a rate of change deceleration on a month-over-month basis. That's number one. Number two, the Fed's service sector survey that they put out, and this is the Fed's own data, that composite actually went negative in May and continues to decelerate. The composite new orders index is in absolute free fall. It's ridiculous to look at that one item alone and say that activity appears to have picked up. I don't know how anyone could come to that conclusion. Existing home sales decelerating. Consumer confidence just getting crushed. CEO confidence is actually decelerating. Now, I want to spend just a moment on that. If you're the CEO of a company, your job is to make shareholders money. I know that might sound a little crass, but at the end of the day, within a capitalist society, if you are the CEO of a publicly traded company, your job is to make your shareholders money. And therefore, our experience is that in most cases, CEOs are the very last people on the planet that will give you an indication that their confidence is bad. They need to be at all times honest, transparent, trustworthy, but they have to be positive. Otherwise, people bail on that particular position within the company. And then the shares obviously get a little bit more action on the downside. So CEO confidence decelerating, getting slammed. The NFIB small business sentiment, just terrible. I mean, we've talked about this in the past, so I don't want to chew on it anymore, but it is terrible when you look at it on a sentiment basis. The small employment the small business employment index that we track went negative in February and April and May. But what's actually starting to pick up? Margin pressure. How's margin pressure picking up? Because inventories have just completely ballooned higher as demand has just gotten whacked and slowed way down. Labor, commodity, input costs, those are all super, super acute. They're tight, they're rising. This just isn't the kind of factor, the kind of cocktail that would be supportive of you know, a continuation of all-time high margin trends, right? Because that's what we're coming off of. We're coming off of the 2021 all-time high margin expansion that went on from corporates across the cycle. And that's exactly what we expected and saw in 2021 as Quad 2, which is growth and inflation accelerating, was taking place. Well, now the opposite of that is happening. Quad 4, as we talked about in December and in January, as that deep and deepening and broadening economic cycle happens, you get growth decelerating, and then eventually you start to get disinflation on the margins. And I'll talk about that in more depth as we kind of roll through here. If we think about consumers, inflation has what we would view as a K-shaped distribution. And what I mean by K-shaped distribution is just a function of recognizing that society, in fact, has some different levels of economic structure, right? Based on a person's income. And obviously those in the upper portion of the K leg are the upper income echelon, and those in the lower half of the K leg are in the lower portion of the economic or income echelon. And when you look at food, energy, and shelter, that particular subset comprises 12 percentage points more of expenditures for the bottom income quintiles than it does the top. Now, 12% is a lot, especially when many of those people were already living paycheck to paycheck. Those particular components have also seen some of the largest price accelerations. And we've talked about how food, energy, and shelter on balance have gone up on a rate of change basis more than anything else, notwithstanding maybe natural gas when it was at its peak. But obviously that's a much different cycle than where we're at now. So if you think of essential spending, it's absolutely captured a much, much larger and an increasing share of wallet from other discretionary consumptions, especially for the lower income structure of our current economic system. And so as you think about that, unfortunately, the lower income households are absolutely the hardest hit. We talked about this a few weeks ago, Sean. I went through an actual survey where respondents were given a subset of questions, and the questions had a lot to do with essentially, you know, how do you feel about paying your bills, right?
Yeah.
Two-thirds of all lower-income Americans right now have doubts about simply paying their monthly bills. that gets lost in the noise of what goes on in market cycles every single day. But as you look at how our economy is structured, the vast majority of it is consumption. And so because of that, obviously, when the consumer is getting nailed, that hurts consumption in a big, big way. So if you think about inflation and the cost of living that goes along with rising and high inflation, obviously real consumption just continues to get hammered down, and that perpetuates a much deeper quad four, which again is decelerating growth and then deflation or disinflation, I should say. Savings. Lots of people have continued, and this confounds me, Sean. But people still talk about how great of shape the consumer happens to be in. And nothing could be further from the truth for a host of reasons. But savings, if you think about actual money that people have for the bottom quintile, that hasn't only retraced the pre-pandemic type related gains that we saw due to the stimulus checks and everything else where savings ballooned, but it's now $13 billion less than what it was before the pandemic hit. Let that sink in for just a second. That's a lot of money for the lower income echelon, the two-thirds of people who are saying they're struggling with just making their monthly bills. Credit cards, as we've talked about, have hit all-time highs in terms of the debt load. But on top of that, credit card interest rates have continued to step higher as the rise in inflation and then, of course, what the Fed has been doing with their tightening campaign. The last report that we saw was that current credit card interest rates are running roughly 20.2%. These are multi-decade highs. So not only are you slamming people with massive amounts of inflation, at the same time, real wages are going to the floor, but you're hitting people terribly with these high credit card rates that so many people have come to have to rely on simply to kind of make their ends meet. And all of this, Sean, is happening while the Fed is just beginning their quantitative tightening. Now, let me spend just a minute on that. If we think of quantitative easing, that's when the Fed is liquefying the monetary system. They're buying bonds in the open market, treasuries, mortgage-backed securities, different forms of collateralized types of debt obligations that are built by Wall Street. And what does that do? It forces cash into the system. That cash then oftentimes ends up on bank balance sheets. The reserve requirements get changed, so credit starts to flow really, really freely. QT, quantitative tightening, is the absolute opposite of that. It's the Fed's attempt to tighten monetary policy by shrinking its balance sheet. So not only are they not buying these bonds in the open market and sending cash into the system, they're taking it out. And they're taking it out by making a clear statement to everyone that they're going to start selling their balance sheet down. Now, interestingly enough, as of this week, the Fed still hasn't done that. Now, they have said very clearly that June, July, and August are going to be $47.5 billion per month each of liquidations from their balance sheet. Now, that might sound like a lot, and it is. But it pales in comparison to the size of their balance sheet, which, you know, again, is hovering over some $4 trillion or some ridiculous number like that. So if you think about how the Fed has increased interest rates, the Fed shrinking their money supply through its balance sheet reduction process hasn't even started yet. But if they're going to hold true to what they said they're going to do, that means they're going to have to catch up in July and August before they hit September. In September, they're supposed to go to, I think, $60 billion a month, eventually ratcheting it up to like $97 billion a month. Their objective is to bring down, in their minds, again, inflation through the rearview mirror. And what they're not paying attention to, and I get asked this all the time, Sean, I don't know why they're not paying attention to commodity space, but they don't. They're simply paying attention to headline CPI. And so as they pay attention to headline CPI, they're just looking at the rearview mirror, and that's going to continue for them to keep doing what they're doing, balance sheet reductions. And all that does, Sean, is it compounds the effect of the rate hikes. I don't know, a few, two, 3 years ago, the Federal Reserve did this research paper, And what they were attempting to do was try and find out, like, okay, well, if we reduce our balance sheet, what does that do ultimately to GDP? Mm-hmm. And so if you kind of do back of the napkin math, it basically states that if you have roughly a 2% change in GDP, how does that equate to the overall amount of bond sales into the system that go on? And so essentially, if you think of a GDP at roughly $24 trillion, a 2% change of that is equal to about $500 billion. Okay. So as I mentioned, the Fed was set to reduce their balance sheet June, July, and August by 47.5 per month, September at 95 billion. And if you think about how that math plays out, that's like $500 billion that's being shed by just the end of this year, which would equate to 2% of GDP, right? Mm-hmm. That's a lot. And so when we talk about growth decelerating on a rate of change basis, it's simply recognizing that year over year, quarter over quarter, we're getting data points that are showing and proving that what we were talking about in December and January are really starting to hit the skids right now, right? Mm-hmm. So these tightening expectations that go on and we track daily, right? We're constantly looking at what is the market expect out of the Fed through the end of the year. And what's interesting is that the rate expectations have actually been decelerating. Now, it's small consolation, I think, but the deceleration now is at roughly 7 more hikes to go for 2022.
No.
Yeah, 7 hikes. So what does that mean? That's basically like, 2 percentage points of rate hikes yet. The timeline that the market is now functioning on, if you look at Fed funds futures and how they operate for pulling forward the Federal Reserve capitulating and rolling into a rate cut cycle, is now looking at somewhere in the first half of 2023. But notice that isn't now. Mm-hmm. Notice that isn't this month. Notice that isn't this quarter. Notice that isn't this year, right? There is going to have to be a pretty dramatic change, even beyond what we've already seen happen in both credit and equity markets, for the Fed to actually capitulate. And again, it's simply because they're focused on the rearview mirror of inflation. But what are we seeing in terms of what's important to average citizens like you and me? Recession. Mm-hmm. Recession just surpassed inflation if you're looking at Google search trends in terms of interest. So people like you and I that are out there having to live and spend money on things, we can feel the transition.
Oh, yeah.
People who even are just on the periphery and have no financial education at all, they don't see or understand monetary policy errors. They don't understand what the Fed is doing. They might not even know who the Fed is or what the Fed is, but they certainly can see and feel the transition taking place. At the high end of the spectrum, and this is where it really gets interesting, Sean, at the high end of the spectrum, you have this thing called the wealth effect. You ever heard of the wealth effect before?
I don't think so. No, not at all.
So the wealth effect is an interesting dynamic that takes place in markets when financial assets, including real estate, both go up or down. So rate of change acceleration or rate of change deceleration. And what we find, of course, by simply doing the studies and doing the math behind it, is that when people see their financial assets decelerating, it has a dramatic effect on consumption. So the wealth effect is critical in terms of trend growth for the consumption structure. And consumption's a big deal, as I mentioned. Consumption growth has grown from like roughly 60% of the growth component GDP back in 1960 to roughly 75% of it today. That's a lot. Wow. That's what you have when you have a consumer-oriented economic structure. And that certainly doesn't see anything to be changing on the periphery. But the wealth effect has this impact on what happens to GDP, right? At the end of the day, if people who have means, people who are wealthier in nature or have access to capital, start to see that capital deteriorate, they pull in their reins.
Yeah.
They don't consume. as much as they would otherwise be consuming when they're watching their financial assets, real estate holdings, and otherwise go up at 20% a year or whatever. So when you start to look through the process of this and what its outcome is that if there's a 20% hit to equities, which we've had, yeah, by the way, so the second quarter closed on Thursday. The third quarter started yesterday on Friday. Through the second quarter, the NASDAQ was down 22.3%. Year to date, it's down 29.46%. The S&P is down 20.56%.
Ouch.
So the data that I'm giving you is relevant. A 20% hit to equities coupled with slowing housing, which we know is happening for a whole host of reasons, and I can go over that data as we ensue today's program. But when you start to look at a 20% hit to equities coupled with a slowing housing wealth effect, again, the wealth effect of the slowing value of someone's house due to home price appreciation, is just going to reduce the annualized what's called PCE, right? That's a fancy terminology for growth. Let's put it that way. By an additional 1.8% in the first quarter, right? And then further out another seven quarters by an annualized 1.7%. We just got information here this past week that Q1 GDP was actually negative 1.6%. The Fed's own GDP data coming from Atlanta, the Atlanta Nowcast, as they call it, is suggesting a zero for that GDP data for Q2. Our Nowcasts are showing it negative. So if you get negative, negative back to back, what do you have? Technical recession, yeah. Right? That's technical, but whether or not it's technical is not really what's important. It's important is, can you feel it?
Yeah.
Is it something that you're actually experiencing on a quarter over quarter, month over month basis, right? Mm-hmm. And so that wealth effect is a really, really big deal. And it stretches out over a longer length of time than what most people anticipate. If you talk about eight quarters, what are you doing? You're talking 2 years. Could it be potentially that 2 years worth of wealth effect hurts consumption in the United States of America? Maybe. I'm not worried about 2 years from now, Sean. I'm worried about this week, this month, this quarter. And that's how we manage money. We look at it this week, this month, this quarter. Let's do everything in our power to win and make sure that we get the cycle right. But you can't get the cycle right if you don't understand the base effects of what's actually affecting the cycle. Housing is a big deal in terms of the wealth effect. And what we identified is that it peaked in Q2 of this year, 2022. And so the estimates that we're utilizing as we kind of go through the process of this is that the combined equity and housing wealth effect has contributed as much as 2.45 percentage points to the Q2 2022 GDP data. And what we're anticipating now is that's going to fall to 1.26% in Q3 and 0.94% in Q4.
Ooh. Talking this morning with Chris Klein of Capstone Wealth Management, the website careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. Great website, great resource to learn more about Chris and his team at Capstone Wealth Management. As we're looking at this information, as we're feeling some of that that pain and realizing what's going on, it's a very important time to be talking with Chris, getting to know Chris and the team at Capstone Wealth Management. Again, the website careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. The telephone number, 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. I'll give the number a few more times in the coming segments as well. Give you a chance to grab a pencil, pen, or type it into your phone. Again, the number 866-596-9886. Email info@careformywealth.com. That's info@careformywealth.com. We'll continue our conversation with Chris next as Care for My Wealth continues here on Fox Sports 1070, The Game. This morning, this is Care for My Wealth here, Fox Sports 1070. Of course, Chris comes to us from Capstone Wealth Management, the website careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. Their telephone number, 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. 866-596-9886. You can also email Chris info@careformywealth.com. That's info@careformywealth.com. And Chris, just before we went to break there, started talking a bit about the slowing housing data, some of the numbers that we're seeing. Let's get into that a little bit more if we could.
Yeah, so the wealth effect, and again, I can't express enough the importance of the wealth effect on an economy like ours here in the United States. It's a big deal. And so again, we've seen this wealth effect in the uprise through 2021 due to all the things that were happening on both sides of the financial ledger, equities, housing, crypto, you name it. Everything's going nuts to the upside. Everybody feels rich. Everybody spends more, right? Now it's the opposite of that. There's no more stimulus. There's economic tightening. There's all sorts of things happening that's taking all of that away. And so that wealth effect is going to take away growth from the system. And that's what I talked about right before the break. But what industries are typically hit the hardest by this negative wealth effect? Travel and leisure, which means, of course, airlines, hotels, motels, stuff like that. Home improvement from building and hardware and furniture and appliance type companies, consumer discretionary, companies that are involved in hobbies, sports, apparel, merchandise, restaurants, all that stuff. For us as a firm, what are we looking for? We're looking for opportunities to make money on those industries on the short side, because the wealth effect will in fact affect their earnings. And their earnings are what are going to get clobbered as we go through Q3, because Q3 has some of the biggest base effects. So let me explain what that means. Oh, and by the way, as if the wealth effect on a negative basis for equities, credit, and housing wasn't enough, let's not forget about crypto. Crypto has absolutely been completely annihilated. If you think of crypto wealth, you're looking at a $3 trillion market cap in November of 2021, down to less than $913 billion today. Sean, that's a 70% reduction.
Wow.
And the market hasn't capitulated on that yet. And all you got to do is spend a little bit of time on financial Twitter, for example, and look at all the feeds from people who are the Bitcoin maxis. It's as if to them, a 70% reduction in their wealth hasn't even happened. It's senseless. I've said before, look, you remember these shows, Sean. I'm confident that you remember us talking about how Bitcoin looked like it was peaking. And if we're heading into quad four, that's not the time to own crypto. Don't put yourself in a position to own something just because you think it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. The macro cycle will crush it. And what's happened? The macro cycle has crushed it. If you had just said, look, I don't want to worry about being right, I want to make money, you would have stepped back from that, viewed it as a ticker and a ticker only, and said, I'm out and I'm going to wait for this thing to completely collapse and then I'm going to come back in. But people have been duped by promoters and marketers of the garbage coins, that many of which have now gone to zero, by the way, and sitting back and saying, it'll be okay. It may not. I think it's an industry that's going to get overregulated now because the government's looking at this as its next poster child for regulation. I know nobody wants to talk about that, but you want to see a wealth effect get whacked. Just don't look too much farther than crypto. It's a very, very bad environment. And so far from what we're seeing, at least based on price, volume, and volatility metrics for that asset class, it's not improving. And so for us, I'm not interested in taking a shot on crypto even a little bit until we get out of quad four. Could I miss the bottom in it? Of course, but I'm not into picking bottoms. Not interested in that. I just simply want to be able to protect and make money in an asset class that isn't continuing to fall. The old adage, don't catch a falling knife, don't catch a falling safe. All of that stuff hurts, right? So right before I talked about crypto, I talked about comps. Base effects, right? The Q2 2021 cycle is essentially some of the toughest rate of change comps or comparables ever. And what does that mean? If you're thinking of rate of change in terms of how Wall Street views it, you have to look at the base effect or the comp that that earnings and sales have to get over. Okay. So if we look back at Q3 2021, the S&P 500 aggregate earnings growth that was posted was 37.1%. So to have a rate of change acceleration from 37.1%, you got to have some number in Q3 2022 greater than 37.1%, right? Well, guess what? How hard is that going to be? That's tough. And I'll give you an example. Right now, if you look at all the data points as they come in, economic gravity is absolutely in motion. The current comps that are out there in terms of estimates for Q3 2022 for S&P aggregate earnings growth is 10.6%. Now, you know, the last time I checked, 37.1 is greater than 10. That means it's a rate of change deceleration on a year-over-year basis. The market is simply pricing that in. It's pulling all that forward. And I look at 10% earnings growth on a Q3 cycle, and I say, that's insanity. I don't think it's going to be anywhere near that number. It could be, but I don't think it will be. So again, when you look at Q2 2021, it represented some of the toughest rate of change comps ever. And so this base effect that is now coming from that Q3 2021 data, that's where we start to see the major problems build in. Does it ease on the margin? Yeah, of course, especially as you get farther away from those peak comps, which occurred in Q2 2021. Q2 2021 aggregate earnings growth for the S&P 500 was 87.3%. Well, guess what? We're now in Q3, but Q3 is where you report Q2. Companies are going to come to the table and report economic reality, and they're not going to get anywhere near their Q2 2021 comps or base effects. And so the rate of change deceleration that will take place in that data that comes out is going to be tremendous. How it reflects on the overall market is going to depend on a number of things. One, guidance for how these companies come out and what they do or say going forward. But also, of course, in terms of how the sales data is being played out. So the point being is that when you think of base effects, yeah, sure, they're going to ease moderately as we kind of look at the projection for Q3, you know, and that there is this rate of change growth at 10.6%, but it's a deceleration on a year-over-year basis. Sean, I've talked about this before, but for the benefit of anyone joining us for the very first time, the number doesn't matter. What matters is rate of change math. And a 10.6% number, if by some miracle the S&P 500 aggregate data comes out to be that in Q3 of 2022, which again would be reported in Q4, everybody's going to go nuts saying, look how awesome that is, up 10.6%. And yet forget about the fact that it was a deceleration from the base effect or the comp that they were going up against. And that's what everybody tends to get very, very wrong. And so you've got this fundamental data slowing. The profit cycle is on a one-way trip lower. This is an earnings recession, right? And when you have an earnings recession, you have deceleration of growth. So you have this scenario where, you know, the Fed's talking about a soft landing, right?
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. Soft landing suggests that we haven't landed yet. and okay, that's fine. But, you know, let's assume that they're successful and they actually somehow achieve what they would define as a soft landing, which I think is a joke, but let's just assume for a moment that happened. Sean, earnings still fell by 29 to 48% inside all historical soft landings, as was previously historically defined. Now, if you're a company and you watch your earnings drop by 30 to 50%, I'm not so sure you're feeling like that's just a softness in your overall picture of your company's health. That's a bad deal, right? That's a very, very bad deal. So pay attention to the comps, pay attention to the rate of change deceleration. And again, the decelerations that people might expect to see in inflation are going to take time to work through the market. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, if you looked at commodities, which again right now, the commodity cycle, just for anybody that really, really cares, the commodity cycle is over. Inflation is over. The Fed's not going to realize it. And because of that, more carnage is likely to come. Now, I probably shocked a few people with that statement that inflation is over, because they're not feeling it. They're not seeing it. Yep, you're right. It takes time for these things to actually work themselves into the market. But if you look at commodity space right now, and you want to look at it week over week, month over month, year over year, weeks turn into months, months turn into years. On a month over month basis, that's one of the most valuable elements of being able to identify asset class movement, because as it gains or loses 1 month price momentum, the machine is going to chase it in either direction. If it loses it, it'll chase it down. If it gains it, it'll chase it up. So what do we have? Well, on a month over month basis, crude oil is now down 4.67%. Natural gas is down 33%. Gasoline's down 6%. Heating oil's down 4%. Coal's down 9.6%. It's a good thing we don't live in the UK, because their gas prices for heating, they're up a mere 44.5% over the last month.
Wow.
Bad deal there. Yeah, bad deal. Propane down 1.4% on a month over month basis. How about some of the industrial metals like iron ore or steel, for example? Iron ore is down 11.5%. Steel's down 19.8%. Silver is down 11.2%. Copper is down 20.5% on a month over month basis. How about agriculture? Grains and things like that. Foodstuffs, if you will. Soybeans are down 6% month over month. Wheat is down 21% month over month. Palm oil, which is in a lot of stuff, we've talked about that before, down 27.2% month over month. Cheese is down almost 7%. Milk is down 7.7%. Canola oil down 21.5%. Coffee, I love coffee, down 4%, right? Sugar down 6%. Cotton down 21%. I mean, the point is that you're seeing on the periphery a massive degree of deceleration. And as that deceleration takes place, it eventually will work itself into the market. But from an asset class standpoint, in terms of how the Fed affects both credit and equity markets, it's just going to be straight up too late. So we have to look at this on a lead lag cycle, right? We talked about oil, and oil, of course, is on everyone's mind, because of course it takes a huge component in not only the headline CPI data, but in course in how we all live and function. The majority of people are still out there operating with gas and oil powered vehicles. You're using different oil derivatives for your home and all that sort of stuff, right? Yeah. So if we think about how rate of change works within CPI, diesel is a big deal, because the component of diesel is built into the pricing components of everything that we have, because it's all delivered by big trucks, right? Yep. It leads CPI by a month. Now, rate of change for diesel is still high, but it's flattening. Okay. That's good. In rate of change terms, it's kind of a seesaw sideways movement for the last 3 months, but historically, it's been really tightly correlated with West Texas Intermediate crude, and now we're actually starting to see diesel prices break away from that. If we think of West Texas Intermediate crude, it, as I mentioned a moment ago, on a month-over-month basis, in rate of change terms, is starting to cool off. Now, in absolute terms, it's still high. Year over year, it's up 45%, right? But on a if we look at it, how it leads CPI on a headline basis by 1 month. Natural gas has just completely fallen out of bed. It's been completely hammered, which, of course, if you're a consumer of natural gas, that's a good thing. Natural gas leads CPI by a month. All right. Now, inventories for this stuff is still near or below its five-year level. We talked a little bit about that in the past. Same thing is true for oil. That's going to have a sticky high effect on some of its pricing. But as a commodity, even though oil is still bullish trend, it's rolling over. And at least based on the way it's been trading here over the last couple of days, it's getting really close to breaking trend. Right. If it busts through roughly 102, 103 on WTI, West Texas Intermediate, that then starts to perpetuate the move down. but we're seeing these movements, these rate of change peaks having taken place. Fertilizer, that's a 4-month lead on CPI. Soy costs, 8-month lead on CPI. Corn, 7-month lead on CPI. Wheat, an 8-month lead. Cattle and hogs, they're past peak, right? So that's good. Food costs over the next 4-12 months should start to decelerate, where people will start to see some of the benefits of the commodities on a month-over-month basis starting to decelerate, okay? So not all is lost, not all is hopeless, but it's going to feel that way for a while. And if you're an equity investor or a credit investor, it's absolutely going to feel that way, because the Fed's going to be myopically focused on headline CPI, and headline CPI is just not going to come down in the near term. If we look at how things are playing out with the nowcast data going out to, for example, the Q3 data for this year, it's still at a sticky high, 7.7%. Q4, 7.19. Q1 of 23, 6.14. Yeah, sure, that's a rate of change deceleration. But Sean, that's almost triple of where it was in the fourth quarter of 2019.
Wow.
Those effects will stay with us for a while. And that is one of the biggest problems that equity and credit investors who are bullish buying these dips are going to run into, because the market is not yet in a position where it sees this and says, yep, we're moving back into a rate of change acceleration for earnings and sales, because these companies still have all these high input costs while the consumer has gotten hammered. That's a problem.
Talking this morning with Chris Klein of Capstone Wealth Management. We'll get more details on that with Chris coming up next. Right now, though, I need you to head on over to the website careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. Get to know Chris and his team. The important thing to do, though, this morning is pick up the phone, give Chris a call, 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. You can email Chris, info@careformywealth.com, info at careformywealth.com, and the telephone number, 866-596-9886. We'll continue our conversation with Chris Klein of Capstone Wealth Management. We will do that next as Care for My Wealth continues right here on Fox Sports 1070, The Game. This is Care for My Wealth here, Fox Sports 1070, The Game. The website, careformywealth.com. Learn more about Capstone Wealth Management there. Telephone number, 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. Chris, before we head out this week, kind of what's the macro? What are you guys looking at, kind of a big picture stuff right now?
Yeah, so what's important, I think, to recognize is to have, and this is the strategy that we employ, Sean, is a go anywhere type of strategy that is focused on multi-duration, multi-asset class type of a portfolio. So for us, it literally doesn't matter where we invest. What matters is it liquid, and is its volatility metric declining? Because assets go into those things with declining volatility metrics. So what is that right now? Well, for us, the biggest position we have going into Q3 is cash and the US dollar. The US dollar in quad four continues to accelerate on a day-over-day, week-over-week, month-over-month, year-over-year basis. And so therefore, we want to own U.S. dollars. We want to be short euros, yens, and pounds. Now, why in the world would we focus our attention on currencies? Because the volatility metrics are some of the lowest components of any asset class out there. And when in the midst of a brutal bear market, you want to find an asset class that has minimal volatility. Bitcoin is not one. That's not a currency. That's a commodity. And it's the highest volatility metric of any commodity on the planet, by the way. So for us, it's focusing on currency opportunities, large amounts of cash to be able to be ready for when the next opportunity to short U.S. equities comes in size. And we would certainly focus on that. Long China. We want to own China. Why? Because they're accelerating. Their purchase managed their PMI data that came out was accelerating from contraction to actually expansion. I don't care why, but that's the data that Wall Street sees, and so therefore that's what the machine will chase. Not only that, but they're one of the only countries on the planet that right now are actually expanding their monetary base, not tightening it like we are here in the US or in Europe. So we want to own China, and we want to short Europe, all of them. not just a couple of them, France, Germany, Italy, Finland. I mean, just take a look at a chart of how those have done. Poland, Spain, literally don't care. Just the Eurozone in general. We want to be short that at the right times and the right opportunities. Gold is not there yet. It's just being boring because its volatility metric is low, but it's just not signaling for us an opportunity to want to jump into it yet. Yesterday, we contemplated, we didn't pull the trigger, but we contemplated shorting U.S. Treasuries. Why? Because the interest rate on the U.S. 10-year Treasury literally got down to trend at 2.79%. It hit 2.791 and then reversed higher. Now, does that continue on next week where rates keep going higher and bond prices go lower? I think probable it will, but there are a couple of things that just caused us to step back and say, I'm not sure that that's a trade that I'm ready for just yet. But you might remember just 3 weeks ago, we were talking about owning bonds. And now here I am talking about shorting bonds. In this business, you have to have the capacity to change your mind if the rate of change math and the data says that you should. Don't be just myopically focused on a 60% stock, 40% bond portfolio, because that is a surefire way to get completely hammered. So we want to focus on those things as kind of the main perspective. And then, of course, tactically shorting U.S. equities alongside European equities when that is presenting itself, because when is very valuable when putting on a short position just as much as what is. So that's kind of a broad line macro picture of what we're doing and how we're attacking this particular third quarter as that data death march continues.
So looking at kind of where you're going, let's talk a little bit about where you've been and get a little bit of a performance update. How have you guys been doing at Capstone Wealth Management?
Oh, good question. So let's put it in context. So the month of June, the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ were both down 8.4 and 8.6%. For the month of June, our client portfolios were down roughly 0.26% to 0.54%. So a quarter point to a half a point, roughly. I don't like losing money. I really don't. However, in the midst of a brutal bear market, the key is to control your drawdowns and to maintain capital so that when the bull market comes back and turns, we're making money on top of what we saved. So June, from a risk management perspective, was good. Through Q2, the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ were both down for Q2, 16.4 and 22.3% respectively. And for Q2, our portfolios were off anywhere from 0.13% to 1.35%, just depending upon risk profiles. So hopefully that speaks to you, Sean, and to anyone listening as to what risk management really looks like. When in markets, it's not that you're never going to lose money. The key is to being able to lose money small.
Yeah.
So that when the cycle turns, you've got more capital to compound off of. Remember, if you lose 50% of your capital, you got to get 100% rate of return just to get back in the black, right? That's a tough call for anybody, especially if you're using just very traditional Wall Street type tools, mutual funds or something like that. So I would caution you that in this particular cycle, if we do get a rally, it's still a sell the rip. Mm-hmm. Nothing's changed. We haven't just magically transitioned into a buy the dip cycle, but most people, Sean, are still buying the dip. And that's why, unfortunately, people are down 20 to 30% on the year. Right now, our portfolios for the year to date so far are down anywhere between roughly 2.75% and 4.25%, 4.3%. So those are things that we can fight back from very easily. And I fully believe that in this bear market, we can not only survive, but we can actually thrive and be back in the black in the midst of this bear market. And that's what I expect. That's what I intend. That's what I'm working for every single day. Because again, and I've said this before, I literally do with my own family's capital what I'm doing for clients and vice versa. I don't live in a vacuum. I don't tell people to do things and then do something different for myself. That's not how this works. We're literally attempting to put our money where our mouth is. And that's something that I think is a valuable preposition in terms of, hey, how do you run the company, right? I run the company as if it was my own capital. It means a lot to me. I don't like to lose. I want to continue to focus on growth and expansion. But when things are really going sideways, like in a brutal bear market like we see now, it's about capital preservation. It's about protecting yourself on the downside.
He is.
If you happen to be listening, I'll throw you one more thing.
Yeah.
If you happen to be listening right now and you say to yourself, well, it's too late. Market's already down 20% and, you know, 30% or whatever the number is, and I'm too late. I can't do anything about it. I don't believe that for a moment. The best opportunity you have to better your position is right now, mm-hmm. not yesterday, because yesterday's done, not tomorrow, because it's not here yet, but right now, and positioning yourself for what is to come next week, next month, next quarter, putting your head in the sand and expecting something good to happen through hope. Recognize hope is not a risk management strategy. And you're going to hear a lot of that on TV and especially from the Fed. They just said that. We hope that growth doesn't go negative. Hope is not a risk management process. So don't think that you can't better your position just because you've happened to be in the midst of a bad year right now. Those things can get fixed.
Now is the time to pick up the phone. Give Chris a call. You don't want to wait another day, another week, another hour. Today is the day to call Chris and the team at Capstone Wealth Management. Pick up the phone. Give them a call. 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. One more time. 866-596-9886. Online. careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. Chris, it's always fantastic hanging out with you. You have a great holiday weekend, and we'll talk real soon.
Thanks so much. Happy 4th to everybody, and happy 4th to you and your family, Sean. Appreciate it.
You as well. This is Care for My Wealth here on Fox Sports 1070, The Game.